Hi, I'm Hans Tenbone with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
South, where you had widely spread plantations and very few towns. So, you know, you have to take into account these differences if you're going to explain this situation properly.
Of course. And if you just tuned in, by the way, welcome to We the People, the Constitution Matters. If you haven't listened before and you're listening for the first time, my name is Mike Levins, and just want to welcome you to the program. It's all about the Constitution and how it applies today. And in order to understand the Constitution, we've got to understand our founders. We've got to understand what they believed because, you know, it's kind of important since they're the ones who wrote it. If you don't understand where they're coming from, it's kind of like someone trying to speak to you in another language. You just kind of stare at them and hope maybe something comes across that you've heard before, but that's basically it. You don't really know how to carry the discussion very well. So this is all hinging, Gary, off of this Peirce test, where we talk about the founders' worldview in education. For our listeners who may not have heard in our prior programs, what in the world is the Peirce test on this Friday morning?
Well, it stands for the five areas of the worldview that the Nehemiah Institute thought were most important in reflecting someone's view of the world. They stand for political, economic, education, religious, and social, Peirce. And so I've been discussing each of the areas of the worldview of the founders in that sequence. We started with political. Last week we covered their economic worldviews. And this week we are starting on education. But as I got into it, I found it was a really expansive topic. And I've decided to split it up into three essays that we'll discuss today and the next two Fridays.
Well, there we go. And we're going to go ahead and rifle right on through that on the morning, and I don't think I've ever said this on the air. Happy TGIF, gentlemen, by the way. Thank God it's Friday.
Thank you.
Well, Phil, why don't you teach on the Constitution. How important is it to know how the founders viewed their world as they knew it when we talk about that document?
Well, I think one of the things that we need to explore here is you know, why is it that we moved from that system of education? And I'm not suggesting that we use that identically today, but why is it that we moved away from the system that they had? Was it inferior? So last week we discussed categories of economic systems. And we identified the economic system employed by the British government against the colonists, which was mercantilism. We identified the system the Declaration of Independence and Constitution put in place, free enterprise or capitalism, and the kind of system under which we live today. So one could easily come to the conclusion that our economic system has regressed over time and would benefit greatly by returning to the economic system that the founding generation envisioned. But that logic does not transfer easily to education systems. We can't assume that going back to the education system to which the founding generation was exposed would resolve all the problems our nation faces today. You know, obviously there has been an explosion of information and the printed word since the late 18th century. So today's education systems must adjust for that. And few people are suggesting that we return to the education systems that produced Franklin, Washington, and Jefferson, as effective as they were. On the other hand, the founding generation distilled and synthesized classical literature for us. And we need not duplicate their learning experience, but we should benefit from it. So to explore the education system of the founding generation, we do need to dispel dispel the myth that private education, which was essentially the only system of education until the mid-19th century, was inferior and in need of improvement through the coercive powers of government.
Well, how about this? Because private education, especially with the advent of Common Core, is becoming so front and center. Pastor Dave, I want to go to you. You know, Christians sometimes get blasted for wanting to homeschool their children or sending them to private schools, which a lot of times happen to be Christian schools. What's your perspective on that idea that Phil was just talking about, private education is somehow inferior? Pastor David?
Well, you know...
I thought we lost you for a second there. Good to have you. Good to have you still on.
Sorry about that. What we look at, if you want to compare what we have today, the best comparison would be to look at what's happening internationally. How does our education system compare with, well, say, other developed countries of the world? And all of the studies that have been done to compare our education system with that of all the other developed nations of the world shows that we are dead last in science and math as well as in language. In fact, I looked at a recent research on this, and we're even worse than Vietnam. That's right. We're worse in terms of the actual statistical numbers of students who excel at math and science than Vietnam, that country we were at war with back in the 1960s. And we are spending more per capita than any other nation in the world on the government-run education system, which I think is the best thing to call it, spending more per capita per student than any other country in the world, and we're getting a worse product. I think our system is broken by any standard of measure, and we ought to break the monopoly, which public education has upon our country. We ought to break the monopoly, allow parents to keep the money that otherwise they're forced to spend at gunpoint, essentially, keep the money and spend it on the education they choose for their own family. Let
there
the families
so,
govern that education.
There
not
are
the,
so
not
many
government any longer.
So many statistics that are like that, you know, where we spend more on education per capita, and yet we are losing our place as far as one of the most well-educated nations in the world. And that competition is becoming tougher and tougher with the advent of technology because information is so prevalent. But I find that statistic frightening. But we also see that even in our we were actually talking the other day on a different program about our prisons, our criminal justice system, and how much money is spent on that, and how many people are incarcerated in the United States, and what the statistics are for them coming back to prison. And in spite of all the money you throw at the problem, you can't really fix it. So, well, why don't we, let's dive in then. So education was extremely important, and it was important to the founders, Gary.
Well, it was, and they understood that the whole purpose of education was to equip children to read the Bible, to understand Scripture, and to be able to follow the precepts of the Bible. That was the initial impetus for learning to read and write. That was it. Now, there was also a process of education that was used in the colonial period that we've largely abandoned today. And today we have remnants of that process. It's called the principal approach, and it's only found in a few places in the country. But it is the same process by which the founders learn. And it produces individuals who are equipped to think, to reason, to argue, and to find their way through problems. And unfortunately, since we're not using that process today, graduates of our public education system don't have those analytical skills, those reasoning skills that our founders enjoyed. And we see a big difference today in how they approach the world. So in certain ways, the founders' method is certainly better, and we need to consider going back to that in every venue that we can.
And you said it right on the head there. You hit the nail on the head that many of our students coming out of the education today, they're just more faced with indoctrination than being able to think for themselves.
And well, they're taught to pass tests rather than think, and
right.
rather and the principal process, which contains four steps: researching, relating, reasoning, and recording, is a tried and true method, and it produces individuals who are able to work their way through situations like the founders did.
And then they'll be more equipped to face their world and even handle the problems that we face as a country, contribute positively to them instead of being ignorant to them, which we find many of our people are. They're just ignorant to the things that are going on in our nation, and it's sad. We need to get them involved.
Yeah, the polls are quite depressing and demoralizing when you see that a third of Americans can even name the three branches of their government. That's really depressing, and it needs to change.
And you know what? The education isn't sticking. You know, Phil, you're an educator. The method of education that says, okay, I want you to study to pass this test. Here's the information you need to know. Memorize it. Go ahead and regurgitate it and then move on. You know that that doesn't stick with students very long at all.
Well, often if it does stick, the so-called facts, or maybe you'd call them factoids, are what stick, instead of the process that Gary is talking about, the process of researching and analyzing and recording. That's a foreign process for many students today. So they're not questioning. They're not questioning the inconsistencies that they're seeing between what is in the book, let us say, and the reality that they face in the real world.
And you teach in the collegiate atmosphere, so you probably see this day in and day out, and at the collegiate atmosphere as well.
Well, let me point out that I am not teaching in the what is considered to be the traditional collegiate atmosphere. My students in this case are senior students through the OSHA Lifelong Learning Institute. It's a continuing education program. But simultaneously, I'm also teaching high school students who are products of the private education system. And it is remarkable how those students are able to analyze and reason.
And you're actually getting a good comparison. You said you're working with senior students, but then you're also working with high school students, so you could see the generational difference.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It is amazing.
I would garner to think that the senior students have a lot more critical thinking skills, probably, because of the changes in our education system that have been made over the years. I mean, that's what I would think.
What I am seeing is a very significant mix. In other words, you will get some senior students who are probing and analyzing and researching, and you will get others who have been exposed to the propaganda and who have not learned how to wade through it.
Now, the biggest topic that could, of course, be related to the founders' view on education for our modern-day issues is Common Core. And that's the most applicable topic that we could latch onto when we discuss the founders' worldview of education. Now, with Common Core has come every imaginable argument and controversy, and it just seems to be blowing up our education system, according to many, and many would agree with that. Now, how would the Common Core style of education conflict, and I want to go to you, Pastor David, how would that conflict with how the founders were viewing education, how they were even educated themselves?
Well, if we were to even use the term Common Core, we'd have to say the foundation of education for our founders was the Bible. They learned their alphabet from the Bible. Basically, in Adam all men fall is how they learned the letter A. So the Bible was throughout everything. And one of the things I appreciate about Gary's article is he illustrates that time and again that the founders viewed the Bible as essential. If you didn't understand the Bible, then you really were not an educated person. In fact, the Bible itself says that the fear of the Lord, Proverbs chapter 9, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Or that's Proverbs chapter 1, and Proverbs chapter 9 says the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So if you don't have that as a foundation under every subject matter, why does mathematics work? Well, mathematics works because there is a creator God. He established the universe, and he set the laws for that universe, and therefore mathematics is not some mistake that happened as a result of some explosion in a junkyard, and somehow we just discovered this may work at this point in time, but maybe tomorrow it won't. So the problem with Common Core, as it's currently constructed, is it's a relativistic system. There is no solid subject matter that's absolutely true. It's all an evolving system. In fact, when the states agreed to be part of Common Core, that is, they accepted the bribe money, the federal government said, here's the race to the top money. If you agree to these Common Core standards, and the states asked, well, wait a minute, can we see the Common Core standards? Oh, no, you can't see them because they're not completed yet. We just want you to agree up front to something you have not yet seen by taking this bribe money from the federal government. So quite obviously, the system, and it's even evolving since the first set of standards come out, there's another set. It's an evolving thing that has no fixed standard. It's based with its feet firmly in mid-air. It's completely relativistic, and it's not a good system for anyone's education. Our founders had a solid system of belief built upon what the scriptures teach about every subject area, and building off of that foundation of biblical worldview, then you can really begin to study each of the subsequent subjects with a solidity of understanding that these are facts. These are just not theories or ideas that men have put forward. These are facts that the Creator himself has set forward for us.
Now, you set a wonderful table there for us, David, that the founders were on the foundation of Christian education. That's what their whole worldview was set up on. Gary, what's the worldview that our youth are being set up on today?
Well, it's the worldview of secular humanism, and if you try to introduce, let's say you had a Christian teacher who was in the public system, and she tried to introduce some biblical concept, she would be scolded and maybe even fired for even trying to introduce some Christian principle or use of the Bible in her classroom. It just wouldn't be allowed. Now, one of the big differences we also see between today and the founding period is that in the founding period, education was directed by the parents. It was a parental responsibility. The Bible lays that out as a parental responsibility. When you look at Noah Webster's definition of education, you see it was clearly a parental responsibility. And unfortunately today, we have shirked that responsibility. We've just given the state that important responsibility, and we said, here, you go educate our children, let us know how it turns out. And parents very seldom even pay attention to what their children are learning in the classroom. The textbooks that they're bringing home never get reviewed. And in very few instances will a parent, and I hold myself accountable for this as well. When I was raising my children, when they were still coming up through school, I took that same approach, unfortunately, and now I know how bad that was. Education is and still is a parental responsibility, and parents, even if they're forced to educate their children in the public system through economic requirements, still have to take a personal accountability for that process and know what their children are being taught, and if they don't agree with it, if it runs counter to their mores, their beliefs, then they need to stand up and object.
Well, I want to read something that you've cited before yourself, Gary. This is Noah Webster's 1828 definition of education. That's the date this was written, 1828. Education. This is the definition of education in 1828. Quote, the bringing up, as of a child, instruction, formation of manners. Education comprehends all that series of instruction and discipline which is intended to enlighten the understanding, correct the temper, and form the manners and habits of youth, and fit them for usefulness in their future stations. To give children a good education in manners, arts, and science is important. To give them a religious education is indispensable, and an immense responsibility rests on parents and guardians who neglect these duties. It sounds like he's talking to someone there.
He's talking to us all.
Right. Right, most certainly. Reverend Samuel Davies, when he was asked what is first, second, and the third thing necessary for success in business, and he said boldness, 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 in that order. And we've got to be the same way in how we're talking and approaching any controversy.
Well, it goes back to Webster's definition, to form the manners and habits of youth. If you form those manners and habits correctly at the outset, then they will stay with them for the rest of their life, correcting their temper. We no longer in our public school system pay any attention to moral education. That has been thrown out long ago, when not long after the Bible was thrown out and prayer was thrown out of the schools in 1962 and 63. And so we don't really worry, as in the public education setting, we don't worry about the temper of the child, the manners and habits of the child. As long as they behave in class, that's sufficient, and that's all we expect of them now. But that's certainly not what Webster would have preferred.
Oh, most certainly not. And if we look at the historical aspect of education in the founders' time, it was very regional. We're going to go ahead and talk about that when we get back from this break. You're listening to We the People, the Constitution Matters. Mike Levins here. We have Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Phil Duffy, a teacher at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and Pastor David Whitney. We'll be back after this.
Hi, everybody. Phil Valentine here. It's great to be back on the air in Philly, and especially when my show is being broadcast from the Cradle of Liberty, Valley Forge area, home of freedom-loving patriots both in times past and today, right here on WFYL 1180 AM.
One, two, three.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Fox News Radio, I'm Paul Stevens. A massive cybersecurity breach exposing personal information from millions of federal employees.
We are told that back in December, Chinese hackers accessed the Office of Personnel Management computers, and in the process, they may have been able to breach the personal data of more than 4 million current and former federal employees.
Fox's Kevin Cork at the White House, FBI, and Homeland Security officials are investigating. Tornadoes hitting parts of Colorado, destroying or damaging several homes about 40 miles north of Denver. Rain and flooding gutting at least three homes in the town of Berthoud.
County Road 2 is closed right now. It's the Boulder County, Laramie County line. That's closed due to flooding. Little Thompson River has flooded that road. We've closed some roads in that area to keep residents out of that area because of the damage.
Berthoud Fire Chief Steve Charles, more rain expected in that area today. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in eighth grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people, didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mentioned WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Welcome to We the People, the Constitution Matters here on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. You could call in at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK if you'd like. Mike Levins here. Joining us is Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitution Leadership Initiative, Phil Duffy, a teacher at the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and Pastor David Whitney, all talking about the Constitution and what it means today. You hear it so much in the news, but what in the world was it really meaning? Well, we've got three constitutional experts here joining us via phone. And what we wanted to talk about going into this next segment, Phil, you wanted to illustrate how, because we were talking about Common Core, and there are some different things you wanted to contribute as far as how good did the founders have education when we're talking about Common Core, because that's an issue today. How good was the founders' education when they were around?
Well, when you think of Common Core the basis for, you know, people promoting it, the whole rationale, if you will, is that the current system, which is a government education system, is badly broken. And so the idea is that if we create these national standards, the problem will go away. Well, we have to look back to the founding generation to see how good or how bad that system was. And it's interesting that the office of the late Senator Kennedy in the 1990s released a paper stating that the literacy rate in Massachusetts had never been as high as it was before compulsory schooling was instituted. Before 1850, the literacy rate in Massachusetts was 98%. In the 1990s, it was 91%. It is obvious that government did not take over private education because the system was failing. There had to be other motivations. Now, Alexis de Tocqueville, when he toured the United States in the 1830s, was considered to be one of the best observers of the American scene. I'd like to read a couple of quotes which really focus in on this. And it ties it to the biblical derivation of our education in those times. And this is from Democracy in America. De Tocqueville quoting. Okay. The observer is desirous of forming an opinion on the state of instruction amongst the Anglo-Americans must consider the same object from two different points of view. If he only singles out the learned, he will be astonished to find how rare they are. But if he counts the ignorant, the American people will appear to be the most enlightened community in the world. The whole population is situated between these two extremes. Now, let me interpret this for you, because this is a little confusing. De Tocqueville's ignorant is too strong for today's language. We might say the less learned, if you will, to distinguish these people from the so-called learned people. De Tocqueville's point is that most people in the United States had an education. Now, when de Tocqueville visited the United States in the 1830s, American education was notable for being widespread and so-called mediocre. In fact, it was so widespread that he describes the typical pioneer in this way. And this is fascinating. Everything about him is primitive and unformed, but he himself is the result of the labor and experience of 18 centuries. He wears the dress and he speaks the language of cities. He is acquainted with the past, curious of the future, and ready for argument upon the present. He is, in short, a highly civilized being who consents for a time to inhabit the backwoods and who penetrates into the wilds of the New World with the Bible, an axe, and a file of newspapers.
Interesting. Now, this was at what date again there, Phil?
1830s.
The 1830s. And you would think that, basically, a lot of people would argue that Americans were barbarians at that time because of we didn't have formal education. I mean, we did have education systems, but not necessarily the public education system that has become so regulated and what we know today. They'd argue essentially that we were Neanderthals back then.
Yeah, but that it's to the contrary. We were probably the most educated nation on the face of the earth. And yet, somehow, we went to a coerced governmental system of education. We have to ask ourselves why.
Well,
if I could speak to that, if you look at the founders of the compulsory education system, that is, all education prior to 1830 was private. All education was private, whether it was homeschooling or whether it was private schools. The idea, the very idea of a government-run education system was the brainchild of Horace Mann. And you ask, where did Horace Mann get this idea? Well, he traveled in Prussia over in Europe, looked at the Prussian education system and thought, this is a great thing. I need to bring this back to Massachusetts. The Prussian system was actually created in order to create cannon fodder. Prussia lost a battle, a very serious battle against Napoleon, and the King of Prussia determined that, well, he was going to go back and create an education system that would train the kind of soldiers he needed to win battles against emperors like Napoleon. And so the whole system was a government-run system to produce cannon fodder for the wars that the Prussians wanted. Horace Mann brought this back to Massachusetts, and against the protest of the parents in Massachusetts who were very satisfied with their education system, against their protest, and in some cases at gunpoint, the children were forced into a government-run system that the parents did not want, and yet the legislators had somehow were duped by Horace Mann and others to put them in the system. And you ask, what was the purpose of it? Horace Mann reveals very clearly he wanted to take children away from their parents and the parental influence and the parental control over the value system of their own children, their sons and daughters, and he wanted to impose his value system. If you study Horace Mann, you find he was an anti-Christian, a socialist committed to the destruction and the de-Christianization of the America of the 1830s and the creation of a socialist state. You add to him John Dewey, who 100 years later, who really shaped and formed modern government-run education system, again, a socialist heavily influenced by communism and not desiring the kind of liberty that our founders established here in America, rather desiring a totalitarian type of government, a socialist government, which would not allow people the freedoms that our founders bled and fought and died for. So the system was really designed to destroy America that was established at the founding era.
Well, let's look at how they approached education before those types of individuals started, I guess, corrupting, for lack of a better term, the education system. One of the different parts of how they did education, at least how the founders would have been educated, was that there was an extreme influence, a regionalistic influence, Gary. And it was even by denomination sometimes. We're talking about Christian education being at the core of how the founders were educated. Different denominations had different approaches.
Well, I pointed out that in the Northeast, where you had Calvinism, basically different flavors of Calvinism, the approach was very dramatically on instilling the values and the beliefs and the reverence for the Bible that the parents had onto the children as they came up through the educational system. In the South, it's unmistakable that they had a more aristocratic view of education, where it was the parents' responsibility, but what the parents did in that setting was not as important as it was in the North. There definitely was this difference of view, but even within that regional approach, you still can see that the Bible played the central role in the educational system. Even in the South, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Patrick Henry, all these men were taught using the Bible as the primary textbook. And when they reached the age where they started to be prepared for college, then that branched out into the more liberal classics gave them a more well-rounded education. But still, at the beginning, it was biblically focused. And the teachers were, in fact, ministers. Reverend James Maury taught Thomas Jefferson. James Madison was taught by Reverend Donald Robertson. George Washington was taught by Maury. Thomas Jefferson was, Jefferson was taught by Maury. The ministers were the most educated individuals in the society, and naturally they became the teachers, and so they then came at education from their viewpoint, that a knowledge of the Bible and a reverence for the Bible was the starting point.
And a lot of people just cringed at what you said, Gary. They can think of nothing. I know. They can think of nothing worse than ministers being in charge of education. And we were talking about the principal approach before, and the four steps: researching, reasoning, relating, recording. But they're going to hate this too. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. We know that. That's a scripture. But we have to realize that the founders came, and all their great ideas about freedom and liberty came
from those
principles, the Bible, from Scripture.
Exactly right.
Now, there's some different characteristics of this so-called principal approach that make it inherently biblical. It teaches students to reason biblically for themselves. It produces Christian scholarship. Now, again, understand, folks, this is This is how the founders were educated at the time. This is where we got the Constitution from. This is where we got the Declaration of Independence from. This was their worldview, their mindset. It all began with how they were educated. And this was, what I'm reading to you now, the principal approach, the method in which they were educated. This method has a couple distinct characteristics. First, it teaches students to reason biblically for themselves, and that basically makes them Christian scholars in a way. It nurtures individual self-government in each student, and it makes them take responsibility for their own education and growth, and it sets all learning in the context of God's hand moving in history. In other words, it all ties into his story, and it upholds the teacher and parent as the mentor, essentially, to the student. So it's very family-focused and very biblically based. Historically, we can't ignore that. Literacy, why don't you go into that a little bit, Gary, as to the literacy that they were being founded with.
Before we touch literacy, which Phil has basically documented very well, let me expand upon this principal approach, because it is rare to find a school that employs it today. But when you do find such a school, their results on the Pearce test are head and shoulders above even traditional Christian schools. So that speaks volumes. Traditional schools today, Christian schools today, often use the same textbooks that you will find in use in the public school system. And that's why when you look at the Pearce results, as we did in the very first essay, the traditional Christian schools are not much different than public schools in terms of the worldview of their students and their teachers. But a principal approach school, or a school that employs a biblical worldview, is light years above the traditional Christian school in terms of a biblical worldview. And that's important to realize. It's the result of the principal approach.
And if you just tuned in, welcome to the program, by the way. You're listening to We the People, the Constitution Matters on 1180 WFYL, talking about why the Constitution matters, and it's we the people, really, that matter at the core of that. The Pearce test is a test that measures, essentially, the worldview of the person taking it, whether it would be more of a Christian worldview or more of a humanistic worldview. Just to kind of give you some background if you've not heard us talk about the Pearce test before. Now, Phil, what can you tell us about? Let's take one of the founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson. How was he educated? How can we look at his history, because he's one of the more famous ones when we talk about Christianity, biblical worldviews?
Well, I think you see what I would call a pluralistic system, in the sense that a great deal of his education was at home, but then he is, if you will, farmed out. I think we mentioned Reverend Maury, and in addition to that, he goes to William and Mary and is educated there. And then he is very much self-educated. And this is the goal, I think, of all education for critical thinkers, that ultimately they have to reach the point where they take full responsibility for their own learning, rather than having parents and guardians guide them through the process. I think there's a connection here. Gary has mentioned the regional differences between the North and the South. There are advantages and disadvantages to both, I suppose. The point in the about this is that that was a pluralistic national system, if you will, to the extent that there was a national entity here. That's a pluralistic system. In other words, the benefits of the Southern system and the benefits of the Northern system could be shared.
And then you have more educated persons because they're able to take in more perspectives. You actually have some diversity instead of having a rigid core, and you know what I'm getting at there, a rigid core of education regimented to everyone.
Exactly.
There's another aspect of this that we've basically only briefly mentioned, and that is the lifelong learning. The principal approach instills in a student who's exposed to it a lifelong love of learning. When you see the principal approach in action, and when you've been raised in that, and the steps are part of the way you view your life, you become a learner for the rest of your life, as the founders were. We see them through their letters that they read voluminously, they wrote, they researched, they related, they reasoned all their lives. They were, in fact, lifelong learners, and that's why these programs like Phil is involved in, which encourages lifelong learning, are so important. But when you come up through traditional public education today, you don't get that sense of learning as an attractive pursuit.
Mm-hmm.
When in public school, you get your public school over with, you graduate, you get your diploma, then you get on with your life. But it's important that you remain a lifelong learner because there is so much to learn.
Well, Pastor David, how does it make you feel that some of our great founding fathers like Jefferson and Madison were taught by pastors? How does that make you feel on this Friday morning?
That's beautiful, because you see, they understood. We want to look to somebody who understands the biblical worldview to gain our understanding of a biblical worldview, so that the pastors were, as mentioned already, usually the most educated person in the community, and had that biblical approach to law and government. And the families were the ones that were making this decision, by the way. The pastors were not imposing and say, we're going to force your children to come to our school. No, the parents were saying, we want James Madison studying under a pastor. We want Thomas Jefferson studying under a pastor, and George Washington. Those choices were made by parents, and today parents do not have choices. And indeed, the opposite is taking place. If you look at really what's happening in the schools, we reflect on the evil, perhaps, of Russian communism, where the parents were attacked by the children, and they were trained to attack their parents in the school system of the communist Russia. Do you know that same thing is happening in America today? There's a program in the public education system called D-A-R-E, DARE. You'll see bumper stickers. My student is a DARE graduate or whatever. Well, that DARE program trains the children to spy on and to report on their parents, in fact, to turn their parents into law enforcement officials if their parents happen to have been doing some recreational drugs. Not that I agree with that, but I think it's a terrible thing that our children in our public education system are being trained to report on their parents and turn their parents into the officials. The exact opposite of what our founding era was, where the parents were in control of the education. Here, the parents obviously have no control over the education. I think it's very, very apt that we, at this point in time, say the monopoly of government-run education system needs to be broken, completely set free, that the parents can choose what education they want. And this is going to change. This is going to take a huge mindset change in the part of the American people, because up to this point in time, the American people have said, we are ready to have our taxes raised every single year as long as more of that money goes to the education system.
As a Christian,
it's time to turn that around and to break that monopoly.
Government fancies itself to be a god, from my perspective, as a Christian, because it wants us to get everything from it, when that's not exactly the government's place. I want to read something from John Quincy Adams when he was about, oh, I don't know, what would you say, maybe 10 or between 10 and 13, would you say, Gary, probably?
Yeah, 10.
So I just to think about how a typical 10-year-old is going to write today. Here's how John Quincy Adams wrote when he was 10. This was a letter to his father. Dear sir, I like how it starts already. A lot of people just loved how it started right there. I love to receive letters very well, much better than I love to write them. I make but a poor figure at composition. My head is much too fickle. My thoughts are running after birds, eggs, play, and trifles till I get vexed with myself. Mama has a troublesome task to keep me steady, and I own I am ashamed of myself. I have but just entered the third volume of Smollett, though I had designed to have got half through it by this time, I have determined this week to be more diligent, as Mr. Thaxter will be absent at court, and I cannot pursue my other studies. Well, what do you think of 10-year-old John Quincy?
Well, it would be a rare 10-year-old today to have such eloquence in expression.
No kidding. And I like the P.S. he leaves at the bottom. He leaves a P.S. Sir, if you will be so good as to favor me with a blank book, I will transcribe the most remarkable occurrences I met with in my reading, which will serve to fix them upon my mind. He asks for a blank book so that he can write more.
And that's the record feature of the principal approach.
Exactly. It's amazing to me the eloquence at which was spoken so regularly at that time.
And he was not unusual. He was a product of that educational system, as so many others were.
And the difference, well, we see the difference between today and yesteryear. Well, what about collegiate education at the time? We're wrapping up the program here. We only got about 2 minutes left, but what about collegiate education, Gary? What did that look like?
Well, all the colleges, all but one of the first nine American colleges were formed by denominations. King's College, which became Columbia, Princeton, William & Mary, all these were started by congregations, by denominations, and they had a denominational flavor, no doubt, in their approach to the curriculum. But the purpose for college was to prepare you for the ministry. Now, not everybody who graduated from college went into the ministry, but they were equipped to do so, and their curriculum was certainly focused on making them biblical scholars. So that's the way college education started out in this country, and of course, it's nowhere near that today.
And here's an interesting factoid. 27 of the 56 who signed the Declaration of Independence were college educated as of the time, and as 35 of the delegates were as well who attended the Constitutional Convention. And these were at these schools, which were primarily meant for ministry. You don't think there was a Christian influence somewhere in their education?
Well, certainly. But that points out another factor, because today, a college education is seen as absolutely essential. Back then, it wasn't. Only about 50% of the Declaration signers and 50% of the convention attendees had college educations. Back then, the college education was had a different meaning than it does today. Today, it's looked at more like a high school diploma. Everybody's got to have one, no matter how much it costs.
And then it just goes down in value from there. Well,
right.
We just conclude our program here, We the People, the Constitution Matters. Michael Evans, Gary Porter, Phil Duffy, and Pastor David Whitney all saying thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week from 7 to 8 a.m. Friday morning. Have a wonderful Friday. God bless you, and take care.
Hi, I'm Hans Tenbaum with Valley Forge PC Repair. I offer affordable and expert computer repair services. Deal with a locally owned business who cares more about their clients' needs. The services provided include virus removal, repair, cleanups, tune-ups, tutoring, consulting, and other computer services. Most services can be done at a flat rate. Senior citizens mention WFIL receive a 10% discount. Call me at 610-462-3210 for more information.
ShopRite of Hatfield is American-owned, locally operated grocer. We support veterans and seniors by giving 5% discounts. Just bring in your ID. Download the ShopRite mobile app to enjoy weekly savings, coupons, recipes, and so much more. ShopRite of Hatfield, 170 40-foot road, open 7 days a week, 7 a.m. to 11 p.m.
ShopRite, we're all about food, savings, and you.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180.
AM 1180.
WFYL,
King of Prussia,
Philadelphia.
If you like Car Talk,
Catch Under the Hood, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.